Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. This is a big week for performer and writer Jenny Slate. Her new Netflix special, Stage Fright, dropped. Last night, she was at the town hall. And yesterday was pub day for her new book, Little Weirds. All three creative projects are revealing, personal, and some with some well-considered raunchiness in Slate's unpredictable brand of humor. The Netflix show isn't straight stand-up. It's a part family doc, a little bit of a therapy session, and the book is not straight memoir. Not a this happened, then that happened. It has elements of fictional storytelling, some poetry, some fantasy moments. It's honest and open about heartbreak and family dynamic. Oh, no, yeah, there are ghosts. Both projects spent a lot of time on ghosts, not the metaphorical kind, the real kind. Apparently, Jenny grew up in a haunted house. There's a lot to ask her about, which is fortunate because she's sitting right across from me. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
So last night at the town hall, you were in conversation with someone we both know. I didn't realize this, with Todd Oldham, the designer.
Yes, the wonderful Todd Oldham.
So how do you know Todd?
Well, a few years ago, I was matched with Todd by the Sundance Foundation. They matched performers with artists and asked us to create something that could be sold for charity. Mm-hmm. And so I spoke on the phone with him, and we could create any object. That was it. And I said, I'd like to create one of those trays that's like a soup and sandwich plate. It's like a long rectangular plate with a bowl on it. And the bowl goes on the end, and he never acted like this was very random at all. He was just like, yes, of course. And he was like, and what would you like, you know, painted on it, or how would you like it to look? And I took him really seriously, and he took me really seriously, and I said, I'd like to see a painting of my dog Reggie sitting inside of a living room, but I'd like to see out the window and see that it's raining, and I'd like him to be watching TV, and on the TV should be my other dog, Arthur, dressed as at the wheel of a ship with a little hat on. And he was like, yes, okay. And we became friends because, I don't know.
Because that makes sense.
It makes sense. And he's also just one of the kindest people that I have encountered in my adulthood. A true, true, true benevolent person.
And yeah. The idea that he was that person, will still be that person, and he went through the fashion industry.
That's crazy.
It's a double whammy.
Yeah.
A double wonderful whammy.
The suit that I was wearing last night was a little yellow mini skirt with a little yellow jacket that it was a couture suit that he made for Kate Moss in the 90s. And he let me raid his archive a few years ago, and I took so much stuff.
He sewed me into a dress once.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm good now. I'm great. I'm wearing this black and white flamenco Todd Oldham dress to this event.
Unbelievable.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Do you like those live events?
I love them.
Yeah. What do you like about them?
Oh, I mean, it's such a boring answer, but I love the energy. And I love the proof of my existence. because you know, I didn't really think about it in these terms, but I do think that something kind of drains out of me, mm-hmm. if I haven't been able to perform for a bit. And I get a really bad stage fright, which is sort of one of the themes in my special, which mm-hmm. is called Stage Fright. But the book event was really different because nothing is improvised except whatever I would choose to say in between. But the pieces are so personal that what I'm saying in between is probably the most personal immediate stand-up mm-hmm. you're going to get from me. Yeah.
Were the two projects, the Netflix special and the book, always expected to drop at the same time?
No. And that was an odd surprise. I thought the special would come out in winter of 2020. That's when they projected that. And then someone just called me and said, nope, it's coming out in like a month. And it seems like a lot at once, but it also was a good opportunity for me to realize that my work, while it does span genres, mm-hmm. and it really does, that the themes that are important to me are really shining pretty brightly. And to see that that I can kind of transfer from one genre to another is very satisfying.
I like them as a combination.
Yeah.
I like them as a complement, because the Netflix special, which surprised me a little bit, although it shouldn't have. Like I said, it's sort of well-placed raunchiness in the special. Like sort of you are just all, it's like all, it's very visceral.
Yeah.
And then the book is very cerebral and emotional. So it's just a very interesting, it gives a very full picture of you, I think, the two of them being released at the same time.
Yeah, I think it, that both pieces of work do a good job at showing the fullness of my personality, or what is there at least. And I think comedy just doesn't allow for some things sometimes because it has to be funny. And so sometimes things are too sad. Things are too sad to be there because they're not funny yet. They're just simply still sad. Whereas in the book, I could temper any sort of sorrow with sweetness, which makes it lighter to carry.
My guest is Jenny Slate. She's got a book called Little Weirds and a Netflix special called Stage Fright. So in Stage Fright, the format is interesting because it's partially you performing on stage in this really smart satin pantsuit, black pantsuit.
Big time.
Which moves really beautifully on stage with the way, and you move a lot.
I do.
And then there's the documentary part about your family and your parents, and we see your childhood home. How did you arrive at that format?
To be very honest, I think that at first I didn't have the confidence that the way that I do stand-up would be okayed or whatever for a special. And that is a result of like me not seeing myself clearly, or seeing myself through the lens of imposter syndrome or insecurity or whatever it is that we all have, and also holding myself back because that is comfortable sometimes. It's very hard for me to be putting myself out there without also offering an explanation of why I'm there. And showing my family, I think, felt like the right way to do that, to say, this isn't a direct answer for why I do this, but it is a closer look at where I come from, and you can try to understand on your own the way that you try to understand who a friend is.
What were the initial conversations like with your mom and dad, who we should say are over in the control room over there? Hi, mom and dad. This is when you said, I'm bringing Cruz into the house.
They don't come with me everywhere, but they came to see the show last night. I am an adult. I was at their house when I first got the news that I was going to be able to make the special.
Oh, nice.
And I came downstairs and I told them about it. And I think the initial reaction was like, there's some shyness. Because although if you talk to any member of my family, I think it's nice to be in conversation with any one of them. I feel that way. But I'm the only real performer and the person who's asking to be seen and paid attention to. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to me is like, you know, my role in our family. So there was shyness, but they were very game to do it and then had like reasonable reservations.
It's funny that you said that you described yourself as the performer, as the one that you want people to look at because you're a middle child.
Yeah.
We learn that. We meet your sisters, your siblings. So I went, on psychology.com and I looked up middle child.
Yeah.
Right. So
did
middle
child.
Did
you see my picture?
Well, listen to this description, Jenny. They are agreeable, diplomatic, and compromising, and they handle disappointment well. They have realistic expectations, are the least likely to be spoiled, and they tend to be the most independent because they often feel left out. They tend to gravitate towards friends outside the family.
Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah? You feel like you're a sort of a middle child. How do you think that has what impact has that had on your work?
I've always been allowed to be myself in our family, which is a really great origins for, a self, if you want to have a self that you can deal with. And I can't remember a time when I didn't want to be a performer. So any of those instincts that might come up, like psychologically speaking, seem to be integrated pretty quickly. And also, my grandfather, Lester, I have very, very early memories of him telling me that I was like these old performers in the Yiddish theater and telling me there's a place for me, not just now, but like in history, there have been other people like you who for some reason want to get up and make a scene or do a performance. But I also am the only one that moved far away and I have lived independently and I need space sometimes. Maybe that's just because I also like the joy of introducing myself to people.
In the special, though, you mentioned your grandfather because we meet your grandmothers.
Yeah.
And you do a really good imitation of one of your grandmothers, your Nana Connie.
Yeah.
So let's take, we're going to hear Nana Connie as well.
Wow, but, cool. Okay.
Let's take a listen. This is Jenny Slate as Nana Connie.
My Nana Connie's voice is like diamonds being rolled around in the dust. She calls me very often, and she always says the same thing, and it goes like this.
You are gorgeous. And it's not just that you're gorgeous. It's not just that you're smart. It's that you're good.
Okay, now here is the actual Nana Connie.
You know, terrific, Jenny. You really are.
You're so terrific.
We all love you.
We all love you.
I can't wait to see the next movie.
Well,
it's coming out soon, I hope.
I have no idea. That's the way my life goes.
Those are clips from the Netflix special, Stage Fright. Tell us about Nana Connie.
Nana Connie is the nicest person that has ever been alive. If you go to Legal Seafoods in the Boston area, like, 8 different elderly Jewish people will come up to the booth as if my grandmother is like a benevolent mafia, like godfather, and they're like, Connie, thank you so much for your lovely note. Thank you for the cake. She is the epitome of good manners paired with warmth. There's not emptiness in her, in the way that she socializes. She's like the example for me of how to be a social person who is useful, and also how style can be something that is pleasing and warming and not just the result of vanity.
No, she is quite stylish.
Yeah,
she is,
and always
quite lovely. Were you always doing her voice? Like, was little Jenny doing a little version of Nana Connie? Or when did that come out, that you found out, oh my gosh, I can actually sound exactly like my grandmother?
You know what? I can actually pinpoint it, which is weird because usually I can't. But when my grandfather was still alive and I was probably a tween and saying the word fart a lot, I remember at the Shabbat table, my grandmother started to say out loud, and she very rarely, whatever, like, she never scolded us or anything, but she just said, I don't like that word, fat. And I just remember thinking, that is so crazy how she says the word fart, that it's just like, fart. It's nothing. It's just, it sounds like a door creaking. It's so funny to me. And I think I started to mimic that because it's just astounding.
That is such a good story. And it's also got a little bit of the broad Boston in there, too.
Yeah.
You hear the even if you don't hear the word, you hear the Boston.
You definitely hear the Boston. Like, she says, can't. Instead of can't.
I can't do
it. I can't believe it. They stole the sugar.
She says a vase.
Yeah.
Put the flowers in the vase.
I don't know if she says vase. Maybe she says vase. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Well, ask. So another really interesting moment in the Stage Fright special is you go into your closet.
Yeah.
From when you were.
Into my closet. Yeah,
your personal closet. Mm. And you start reading things on the wall that you've written. I'm wondering, over the course of the special, did you learn anything about you that you realized, oh, that's why I'm like I am?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's humiliating, or makes me feel humility to see how I just was like so obsessed with justice. First of all, it shows, like, I was really sensitive, really sensitive and not tough. And it surprised me and sort of made me feel embarrassed. But I knew it, that I've hung on to the slights that occurred in like 7th grade and that bullying. And when I've gotten back in touch with people from school, the through line has been, we don't remember you as that person. And so I sort of felt ashamed that I was hanging on to bitterness. And I think that, well, thank goodness that a function of art can be that it helps you to state what has occurred and also let go, but to leave the art as a monument for your experience. And so that's what this was. But I think I also was like, and Gillian, the director, Gillian Robespierre, who also directed Obvious Child and Landline, was like, wow, you were really obsessed with justice, obsessed with fairness and punishment a little bit. Like, these people shouldn't have done this. Some of the things that were written in the closet wall, I felt were too hyped up for what I wanted to show. And I was like, well, we'll send that message. But, like, you know, I had really hurt feelings as a teenager, like many teenagers do. And I don't know if it just felt... I think what was important to me was to see that even though I was very, very angry and that those times have affected me, it doesn't put a mark on the kindness in my character. But it's a hard lesson to learn.
My guest is Jenny Sclate. We've been talking about her Netflix special Stage Fright. We'll talk a little bit more with Jenny about her new book, Little Weirds, after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Jenny Sclate. Jenny has a new Netflix special called Stage Fright and a new book called Little Weirds. Okay, I'll do the most obvious questions about the titles of these two projects.
Okay.
Do you still have stage fright?
Yes.
Yes, you still have stage fright.
Yeah, I have it, but I don't, but it's not debilitating. But it just won't. It's like, you know, if you've ever done like the Headspace meditation app, it's like the point is not that anxiety will ever go away. It probably won't. But you have to learn how to like note it and understand that it is not your actual identity or your personality or whatever. And that's where I am with that. But I can become very uncomfortable before performances and often do. And now I've just learned that that's what's up.
Do you have stage fright on a movie set?
No. I don't.
It's with a live audience. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's live audience and the fact that I'm putting something out really personal and there's the potential that I slip and I make it too sad or I make it too pissy or whatever, and that people are just kind of like, well, we didn't ask for that, you know, because they did ask for comedy. And so... it's a very, very frightening thing to do, to not repress yourself, not oppress yourself, especially as a woman living in patriarchy, to be like, I have to make sure that I tell the truth about who I am and how powerful that is. But also...
You don't want to fall into the likability trap.
That's right. And also, I don't want to fall into the trap that happens for women, which is like, your anger is not okay. Your anger isn't okay. Because our anger is fine. It's, you know, it's what you do with it. And so on stage, I'm just like striking that balance, and I'm bringing a lot with me. So, yeah, I think it's reasonable to feel as scared as I do. What's unreasonable is how long I've done this and that it hasn't changed, or has it got it's gotten worse.
Well, I think you're also your special. This particular special is really, I mean, you're really open. You're out there and vulnerable. I think the stage fright seems entirely reasonable. You're not going out and putting on a character.
No.
You're not doing a tight 10.
No, I'm never doing a tight 10. The special doesn't even start for 15 minutes after it starts. But I never have. And the special is 100% representative of what it's like to see me on any night, which is the only reason to do a special. I mean, is to show what I'm like. And yeah, I don't have a shtick or anything like that. And I don't have an act or a gimmick. Unless I myself as a person am a complete act and gimmick, but I don't think I am. But it is material, and it's just, I tried to actually make it more concise and plan it more, and that's what we did in the dress rehearsal, and it was legitimately the worst show of my life. The worst show of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really telling.
Really insane. And so... when we filmed the special, which was the night after, and it was two back-to-back shows, the special is, you know, roughly an hour long. Each show was an hour and a half. And I did have bits, like, bullet-pointed, but I didn't have anything written down, and a lot of things were new that night.
Little Weirds is the title of your book. Where'd the title come from?
The title came from a conversation that I had with my phenomenal editor at Little Brown, Jean Garnett, who was reading the manuscript and said, well, I like this, and this is a book, and you did what you said, although I didn't understand what it was when you said you would. It's here, and I get it, but it's not really essays, and it's not short stories. Like, what is this? What is this? What will we say that it is? And I said, well, it's, you know, somewhere between, like, a menu and a Bible. And she was like, okay, and what else? And I was like, it's just all the little weirds that I have like in my mind. And she said, okay, well, that's what we'll call the book.
So the little weirds are various, your thoughts, stories. Sometimes the ideas seem like they floated through and you just wrote them down on the way.
Yeah.
Before they floated out of your brain. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to read one. This one is called The Pits.
Oh, wow. I've never read this out loud before. I'm glad that you chose this. Okay. Is it okay that there are swears?
Oh, did I not mark out the swears? Let
me see. I can get rid of them.
Okay. Please.
Okay. I'm like,
meant to. Thanks.
It's called The Pits. I am always picking at things when I am nervous or working up a real lather in my thoughts. I'd gone to town on my fingers, and I wasn't about to bite off my lips or F with my feet, so I went ahead and peeled the rind off my heart. Then I sort of ripped it apart and down to nothing, and I looked at what was there and I said factually, this is the pits. The pits are also the seeds. The pit is also a deep place with an actual bottom. You could argue that the bottom of the pit is where you plant the start of the thing that is made to travel to the light. You could prove, if you tried to or wanted to, that the bottom of the pit is, of course, the start of getting up to the top. But it is the planting of the pit that is the hard part. The part where you have to go down there and cover a small hard thing with dark matter. The part where you are supposed to believe in a process, and the part when you must admit to your desire for the thing to work, and that is hard too. But you can do it if you want to try to do it, and the act is singular and special, even though also you may have to do it many times over, and a few of those times the pit will simply stay a pit. You will have to be comfortable with the truth that there is a stone in the dark, a grave for a hope. But if you can get a better view of what is going on, you can see that the problematic pit is really just a small hole along the path that is otherwise lined with the other living things that shot up toward the light.
That was Jenny Slate reading from her new book, Little Weirds. When did you start doing this kind of writing? Was this the kind of writing, were you a little kid journaling, or is this more of your adult writing self?
This is adult writing self. Yeah, I never, like, my journals as a kid are pretty typical, like, I have a crush on, you know, so-and-so. Why don't I have a bra? They're not very illuminating. They're pretty basic. But, you know, it sounds cheesy to say, but I know that it is essentially substantial that I started to figure out that there was this sort of voice inside of me when I started to tweet. And of course, some of my tweets are like diarrhea again or whatever, you know, which is like, unfortunately, become somehow my brand. And I didn't mean for that to happen. But then there would be these times where I really would feel a feeling really strongly. And in spite of whatever the world actually presents itself to be, sometimes see a world of like benevolent life and want to send a message, mm-hmm. Like sort of a what this book became, which is a transmission from the interior. It's like a lot of, you know, like when Carl Sagan and Annie, is it Droyan?
Droyan.
Yeah, made the gold mm-hmm. record for outer space. Like, that's what I'm doing too. It's like, this is everything that is here. And so I found that voice, I think, initially through tweeting.
You should read Sasha Sagan's book.
I just got it.
Did you just? Yeah.
And I started reading it, and I just really am into her.
Yeah, she was a guest a couple of weeks ago. I found it really fascinating. Just her use of her, not use, but her sort of examination of her parents' work in a really practical way, in a really like grounded, earthly, this is how we live our lives, these are how we fall in love, this is how we have children, this is the way we try to be who we are. It was really interesting.
I'm very thankful for that book, and I also love the parts where she just talks about how much she loves to be a mother. That just made me feel really loved, even though she's not my mother, and in fact... It's not my mother at all. My mom's in the control booth, but I also love her and she loves me, my mom.
Is that on your agenda, to be a mom?
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah, something you want to do?
Yeah, I would like to do that. And now I understand it. Yeah, I didn't understand it before. I don't think I had enough love to give to myself. And I also didn't feel that I had, just didn't feel that I could. And now I really want to, and I hope I can.
My guest is Jenny Slate. The name of her new book is Little Weirds. So these entries throughout the book, they say, I died.
Yeah.
And then there's and then there's an entry. So I died listening. I died bronze tree. What is the I Died series?
Well, it is complicated, but part of it is just like straight up deep sadness. Mm-hmm. Part of it is vital sensitivity that says, when my feelings get hurt in this certain way, I feel like you're trying to kill me, or I feel like I'm dying. Mm-hmm. I Died Listening is an example of, I feel like this misogynist and the way that he speaks is trying to kill me, erase me, whatever. But also part of it is that sometimes when you feel really, really sad, which is different than being suicidal, and I do want to draw that line, but sometimes when you feel really sad, you want to examine phrases that are like taboo. That's how I felt, at least, that like growing up in a conservative Jewish household, and vaguely started to go reform at some point, but that you don't say that. You don't say I died ever. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to kill yourself, first of all. You're not allowed to make that decision. But, like, you're not allowed. That's for God. That's not for you. That's for ghosts. And what do you do if you're someone whose feelings make you feel like you're being pushed into ghostly dimensions, into darkness where the only people that seem like they would be there would be ghouls or dead people? Why can't I have that phrase for art? And so I wanted to use it for art.
You in the book and in the special, this is some of the overlap, you write about ghosts.
Yeah.
And that your house, where you grew up in Massachusetts, had ghosts.
Yeah.
First of all, did the house really have ghosts?
It did.
For real?
For real.
How do you know?
Because my family members all saw them. And they're not liars or insane.
So it was like a party of ghosts? Did they seem to be interrelated? When did they appear? How did they appear?
They appeared over decades. The first one was a sea captain who appeared right when my parents moved into the house. And that's, my dad tells that story in the special. Mm-hmm. They smelled his pipe smoke, and my dad looked over the banister and saw, you know, like, oh my gosh, what's happening? The form of sort of a seafaring fellow coming up the stairs.
And your parents are sophisticated, elegant people.
They are sophisticated, elegant people. Yeah, they're intellectuals. I mean, we're a spiritual bunch. I don't think anybody wants to see a ghost unless they're not interesting, and that's going to be like their thing that they're like, I saw a ghost. Right. But I think, I don't think my parents needed that in order to zhuzh up their identities. I think they're pretty exciting. But my mom and my little sister saw a woman walk out of the room on the far end of the hallway and float up into a chandelier.
How about you?
I have never seen a ghost.
So are you the only one in the house who hasn't seen a ghost?
That's right. Yeah. And I think I said this last night, but I think it's because the ghosts know that I'm like, I believe in them and I can't help them. And I'm just as meek and searching as they are, and that they know that they'll kill me if they show up. I think I'll have a heart attack.
There's a part in the special which is very funny. You describe about your perpetually surprised face.
Yeah.
Is the reason, the ghosts are the reason why you have this sort of one expression that you have a lot.
Yeah.
Was there ever any conversation about moving?
No, because also we're a group that really digs in, you know, like we just really dig into what we're doing. And in fact, like a bunch of my friends have remarked that when I go home, I don't really like leave the house. And former partners have also remarked this on this, that like when you go to your parents' house, you just stay in the house. You all just like stay in the house, and maybe you go to the supermarket, but like we just stay together, like go on vacation. I don't meet the other kids at the resort or whatever, at the Club Med. I'm just staying with my parents. My best friends in high school were my parents. Yeah.
That's really nice, actually.
Yeah, it's really nice.
You know, at the time when you're a kid, you're not so sure. But as an adult, you realize that is really lovely, actually.
Yeah, I also actually feel like my parents, you know, especially when I was having a hard time in school, mm-hmm. like my mom's message to me was like, this is their heyday, these bullies. Like, you don't want to be like that. You're going to be great in your adulthood. You're going to have a really good time. You should just like hang out with us right now. She'd always be like, your dad's my best friend.
We're
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, they're best friends.
After you have so much going on, I feel silly asking this a little bit, but I am curious. Mm. What are you going to do next? What's next?
I don't know. I don't know, but I really hope I can write another book. I'd like to take time with that. Like, it felt like this book, I got the book deal in October of 2017, and then I immediately got a film and wasn't really able to start, although I would start to collect phrases, but I ended up really writing this book in like 2 months.
Wow.
So yeah, and that is cool, but also was not pleasurable in terms of the anxiety that it created and the feelings, negative feelings I have about my truly, you know, oof, just pathological procrastination. But I'd like to write another book. I'd like to start collecting scraps of thought for that. And I'd like to be in a good film. But I'm really, really not eager to compromise on what I think that is. And I'm lucky enough that at this point, I don't have to.
Well, that'll be exciting. Whatever your next film comes out, we'll know that you really...
That I really, really wanted to
really,
do it.
Really, really wanted to do it.
Well, we're making a Marcel the Shell feature film, and I think we probably have about a year left on that. And there's a world in which that's the next thing that comes out for me. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm mostly just really thankful that I don't feel highly, highly anxious and that I mostly feel healthy. And I've recently moved primarily to Massachusetts. My fiance and I live there in an old house on a peninsula. And I like being there and being a reader and being quiet.
And yeah. Wearing big sweaters.
I am wearing big sweaters. And the weirdest thing also about this book is that I wrote it before I met my fiance, or before I was with him. I actually had met him, but I wasn't with him nor in touch with him. And he's in a bunch of the pieces. And there's a piece called I Want to Look Out a Window, where I say, it started as just like a group of wishes and sort of devolves into like, oh God, I'm not living that dream. But I've entered a zone where a bunch of that has started appearing for me. And so just because I spent so much of my time fretting before, I'd like to enjoy it. Who knows how long it will last.
Don't fret. The name of the special is Stage Fright. It is on Netflix. The name of the book is Little Weirds. Jenny Slate, thank you for coming in and spending so much time with us.
Thank you for having me. I love this show. It's so nice to be here.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.